Welcome to Edmentum's Podcast for Parents series, where we cover topics to help you navigate the twists and turns of home learning. I'm your host, David Cicero, and I'm so excited to join you on this journey. So let's go. When COVID hit, a colleague of mine, Mark, who is actually an education technology professional, had it pretty tough in terms of working from home with kids. He was managing a virtual team, his wife was working away from home, and he was at home with two young kids. But all the while, you'd never really know he was having a tough time, usually. He was pretty much always in a level mood and productive. I just really want to know how he did it and share it with you all. Mark's on the line with us today. Mark, can you give us a sense of what your office looked like, your home office, a few months ago, and what a typical day looked and felt like for you?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the for making it sound like I was doing such a good job. I think in the moments it didn't feel like I was doing such a good job, so my charade worked quite well, is what I'm hearing you saying. But yeah, my physical office, you know, traditionally I'm in a job where I always say I work from home and I travel, right? So I have an office set up, which is a shared space in our house with my youngest, who's about 18 months. So it's his nursery in my office. We call it the officery. I had to essentially abandon that during shutdown. As you said, my spouse was out of the house a good sort of 18 hours a day. I got two kiddos at home. So as many people, I became a kitchen worker. I even coined the phrase kitchen workers unite. We tried to start a union, but it never really came off. But yeah, I mean, I have one of those homes where it's like the family room connected to the kitchen, you know, it's all one room or whatever. So I set myself up standing space in the kitchen on my kitchen counter. I picked the side of the room so the light would shine on my face because I do a lot of Zoom meetings. And I actually initially started sitting. But I don't know if you know this, but children are very, very clingy. So they'd always be on my lap, always be up in my business. So I had to switch to standing for essentially sort of 6 to 8 hours a day, just so that when they came to annoy me, they weren't visible on my Zoom camera, like they were pulling on my pant leg. And then the other benefit of the kitchen workers, you get the kitchen counter. So you can align a vast array of snacks and treats on said kitchen counter that you can launch at the children when they come to you to get them just to stay away for a hot second. So yeah, it was literally like upturned box, kitchen counter, computer on top, snacks aligned up next to coffee. And then I would stand for all of the various Zoom meetings I had in order to create the facade of the fact that I had a functioning office life.
Well, it sounds pretty good. I like the standing thing. I would have never thought of that. I don't think I will do that, but I really like that. That's how you solve that problem. Because my son is the same way, right? He wants to be on me. He wants to be hanging from my chair. He wants to play a game with it. So, yeah. Hey, just get rid of that whole option for them. Also, you've got some stuff there to keep them distracted, right? You went with snacks apparently, but maybe okay. I'm sure you have toys laying around and things like that. And it sounds like you just tried to find your own space, right? And what I really want to kind of dig into here is how you continue to kind of find that space, not only physically, but mentally. And sometimes just throwing that snack, you know, or distracting them for a moment may not be enough for you to really kind of detach. What sorts of things do you think what sorts of things did you do to switch off just to stay sane? And what do you think you were sort of really switching off from? Was it just the clingy thing, or was that the surface of a different feeling you later discovered?
I think it's interesting you say your own space. Like, as I reflect on that, in there's two pieces that I needed switch off in order to do. One was to do my work, right? I needed to work. I have a job that requires a significant amount of flexibility in terms of, at any given moment, there might be an important stakeholder from a school that I need to talk to, and they're available now and they're not going to be available again. So I got to jump on to a call, and I have to be productive with my work. In order to do that, I need to be, for that moment, it might even be 5 minutes, be separate from my kiddos to be productive. So when you said your own space, like even now I'm reflecting that like my space in that moment was literally the upper half of my body, right? Like it was like the top of my body because I was standing up there pulling on my pant legs, but everything from the waist up, that's mine that I can use to work with. So I think is creating a disconnect with almost like the sort of cheesy analogy of the duck looking calm above the water, you know, with their legs kicking below, like literally that of they can sit at my feet and play and do stuff and eat their snacks. I can work from the waist up. So that sort of space one is being able to kind of detach myself from what they're doing. Space two is that first part of what you said, which is maintaining my own sanity. I think if there's something I was really trying to get away from, it's really just the noises, like the space to be able to think. Like if you're ever in that spot of like eight people are asking you eight different questions and your act out is like, I just everybody shut up. I just need to think for a second. Like that is all day, every day of my COVID lockdown experience where there is never a moment where there isn't noise. And for me as well, I'm a classic introvert. And, you know, when I say that, not in the sense of like, you know, I don't like talking to people. I mean, I like having friends. I like working with teams, but the quiet space is my recharge space. And without it, I never have time to recharge my batteries. So it's like creating a space in my head where I could literally listen to my own thoughts is what I was trying to create. So there were ways in which I can do that, even if it's for 30 seconds, because a big part of my job is, you know, I'm a decision maker. I, not only am I a decision maker, I'm a consultant. So my job is to help other people make decisions. So in order to make decisions quickly and clearly, I need space to think. So that might be 30 seconds. So that's literally, I'm standing up, I throw, my 18-month-old loves those Ritz cracker things. Like I throw a cracker at him, that's 30 seconds of think time. I can literally sit, think, he's quiet, or stand and think. And I can make a decision, or I can help somebody else make a decision in that moment. The time, the disconnect to work on my own mental state where it's extended, you know, I might want 20 minutes, an hour of quiet. That is the one that's a little more challenging, and you have to give some things up to do that. And the thing that I gave up is classic 21st century parent. I'm trying to reduce the amount of screen time that my kids have, right? Like for me, screen time is a monster for some reason. And I'm constantly falling down a rabbit hole of websites of like, well, my kids are 4 years old. How much screen time should they have? Oh, I'm 5 minutes over that. When we first went into lockdown, I'm like, okay, cool. I can give them activities. We're going to do stuff. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to keep the screen time low. And that was just a complete disaster. It did not work at all. I tried to do pockets of educational screen time. Like we're going to go and do a zoo tour or something like that for 5-10 minutes. That just legit didn't work. So what I gave up was trying to avoid extended periods of screen time. I would say anything like more than sort of 30 minutes, I would consider to be extended. And what I did was I structured the day so that in the middle of the day was the screen time period, which was usually an hour to 90 minutes. And that could be anything from straight up good quality educational screen time to just they're going to watch Sheriff Callie for 20 minutes or whatever. And I would build a YouTube playlist. Like there's a thing on my TV where I can make like YouTube play on the TV or whatever, build a short playlist that they would watch. It would last 60 to 70 minutes, some educational, some not. That period was my quiet time too, where I could use to separate. And I literally would put my headphones on for that hour, sometimes even I used to travel, if you remember, but we used to travel places. And one year for Black Friday, I picked up a pair of those noise canceling headphones. I'd literally put those on and just flip the noise canceling button on with no music at all, just to like reduce the noise in my head, and would sit around the corner and just go down a Facebook rabbit hole or read a chapter of a book or whatever it was, just to create some silent space so that I could think about things and create a separation, even though we're in the same physical space.
So what I'm really hearing here is, not only are you sort of finding time to switch off yourself, but you're lining it up with what I see as switch off time for your kids. So if you've got activities all day, I mean, kids like to do activities, but you know, there comes a point where, you know, they just don't want to read anymore or be trying to read. It's not right. All that easy, right? And so they deserve some switch off time too. Now, if they get, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes of screen time in the middle of the day, they get a chance to switch off, you get a chance to switch off, and you can still sort of be disconnected from each other and kind of have your time alone doing, you know, some mindless activity. And so I kind of really like that idea of, you know, your switch off time can match up with your child's switch off time. And then, you know, maybe you get back to business afterwards. And one of the things that I know we've talked about this a bit before in terms of switching off, I too have to switch off, you know, from, you know, physical interaction and also noise. And, you know, it can be really, really tough to do sometimes. And what comes along with that for me anyway, has been trying to switch off from what I think is the expectation of a parent. So, I mean, how many times my son asked me to play with him and I just simply can't do it. I mean, I just can't. I mean, he might ask me 20 times and every time I have to say either no or maybe later or something like that. And it's like killing me, you know? I think about that later and I justify it. I mean, what am I supposed to do? So, you know, are you dealing with some of these, you know, these sort of more inner feelings, justifications, you know, uncertainty, self-parenting expectations, increased disappointment? Have you experienced any of that? And if you have, how have you kind of just been optimistic throughout it all? And
yeah, you know? I mean, for sure, I have had those as long as I've been a parent, which is not as long as a lot of people, but I mean, I literally agonized over sending our oldest, you know, my first kiddo to daycare. I'm like, I'm handing my child off to someone else, right? And I really struggled with that until I got the feedback of the benefits of it. You know, it's better for them to be interacting with other kids, and it's better for them to be active with different adults than myself. And I think during that shutdown time, yeah, especially with activities, like I'd be trying to build an activity, maybe it's like painting, something that they can do pretty independently. But then, oh, I want you to paint with me. And I'm not, you know, I just made that painting activity so I could do some work, dude. Like that's what you don't understand, right? So the ways in which I dealt with that, and I'm not going to say I was necessarily perfectly successful, but was being very verbal with them of the sort of tally of ways in which I'd been interacting with them. So for example, if I'm doing painting and I'm painting with Kennedy, I'm telling her, hey, we're painting together. And when we're done painting together, we're going to do things separately. Like I'm constantly prompting her that this is our together time. This is our apart time. This is our together time, kind of trying to drill that sort of cadence of these are the ways in which we do things together and these are the ways in which we do things apart, to the point where she has the expectation of this is a solo thing that I'm going to do. Now, it doesn't eliminate it entirely, but it gives me a reason to tell her of like, it's not just, I can't do that with you because I'm not able to or I don't want to. Like literally, this is categorized as our solo time. So that's what we do in our solo time. You know, we at dinner time, we eat dinner. At play together time, we play together solo time, we do things separately. And slowly kind of building that muscle memory with her for that time too. And almost making it, I had a couple of days where this did actually work pretty well, was sort of foreshadowing it, getting her excited about it. Like one of her big solo times was, we have a big bin of like dress up clothes that we've inherited from various cousins and people like that. And her dress up time was her solo time. So like, hey, dress up time's coming up. That's where you go and you play in the thing and you dress up these things. And she would like do, we call it a fashion show, which I'm sure everybody has done this before, but she puts her whatever is her outfit. She's got her mechanic outfit on and she like parades through the house, but I'm not interacting with her. She feels like she's interacting with me because she's showing me the outfit that she's wearing. But in reality, I'm doing my email and I'm just being like, hey, that's awesome every now and again. So creating and prompting that separation. And I mean, I think this is predominantly targeted little kiddos, right? You know, it's going to be different for older kiddos, but is letting her know that that's a key piece. And there are other pieces like that too. Like if you have the ability to, if you've got some outside space where you live, or even if it's like a local park or whatever, that's another perfect solo activity. I have to work from my computer, take my computer with me, and I sit on the bench while they like fall off the climbing apparatus for a while, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's prompting them for that separation. But it's also, and there's something in what you said too, in that you do have to a certain extent be okay with a certain amount of disappointment. It's the same thing with like quiet time for yourself. There are times of the day outside of that quiet time where I could really use some quiet time, but I can't get it. And I have to be okay to myself and say, this isn't quiet time right now. That's going to come tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. Like that's your next quiet time. So you got to bottle that up and schedule it for that time. I think it's true for the adult as much as it's true for the kid. Is there are times where you want something and you're not going to get it. You need to be okay with that and knowing that you will get it soon as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking of something as you were describing the activity you did with your daughter. Like this is going to be your solo time coming up. And then she has a preset solo activity that you've, you know, primed her for basically. And, right, you know, thinking about, you know, different kids have different interests and, you know, my son is, you're not your daughter. So I think something he would like that I might try is saying, look, when I know I need, you know, 20 minutes alone, you know, we have a decent sized backyard. He likes to discover things. He likes to kind of get dirty. I can say, hey, now's your time to go find 6 different things outside, yep, to show me, right? Go collect 6 different things and bring them to me, and then you can tell me why you liked them and things like that, and get him outside and like setting him up and getting him excited to do a solo activity. I don't think that I've been real good about doing that. You know, typically my demeanor, my tone is more like, you should do this because you're like 5 years old now. And, you know,
yeah,
it works, you know, it does work, right? But I think that, you know, it may not necessarily be, but you know, I've tried other stuff too, right? I mean, I've tried it all. I think we've all tried it all. We all feel like we've tried it all, right? But yeah. I like that idea of setting expectations for separation. So I've got like a list, a running list here. I want to just really quickly go over some of the major points that came out of this. Now, one thing you didn't mention, I don't know if you were going to mention it or not, but I'm going to mention it for you, is that you were taking pictures during the day and then sharing them on Facebook later. And you told me before that going back through, after the kids were in bed, you'd go back through those pictures. And that sort of told you, you know what? I thought today didn't go well, but now I kind of feel like it did go well. And that helped out with some of those feelings.
Yeah, I think there's a theme there of, and I did mean this, I'd written this in my notes, but I forgot, but like is, there's a strong place for sense memory, you know, and I'm not a, you know, a mental health expert or anything like that, but creating and tapping into different sense memories works really well for me. So like, for example, when I would list during the tight lockdown, I mean, I live in New York, just, you know, not far outside of New York City. So we had a significant lockdown, like the worst in the country. I mean, literally the whole town was shut down. If you wanted to go somewhere, you couldn't, everything was closed. And I trended, when listening to music, I trended towards music that I enjoyed during my formative years or whatever, right? So when I was like age 14 through, I don't know, 18 or whatever, the albums that I listened to during that period, I started to listen to those again. It's like kind of create that sense memory or tap into that sense memory. And I did a lot of like eating and making of foods that I liked as a kid and things like that. And then I jumped off of that into like, well, I need to create more sense memories that I can tap into in the short term. So what I did was I took a lot of pictures of them during the day. And then at night, I would go through and find the fun one and I would post it to Facebook. And I used the hashtag, this is fine. It's a joke from Frozen 2. For any parent who's listening to this. But anyway, number one, I could go back and look at that and have a sense memory of the previous day of the times that were fun, as opposed to the times where I was just like, all I'm trying to do is talk to this person on the phone. Can you please stop? Like, that's like the put the mute on the Zoom call, scream at your kid, put the mute back off again. That's the bad sense memory. The good sense memory is the time when Riley, for some reason, decided to just take all his clothes off and run around the house screaming. And I just thought it was hilarious. So I would take those pictures, post them to Facebook, and people also started to comment back to me on like, this is the best part of my day is when you post those pictures, you know? So it's a coping mechanism for wiping out the negativity of the day and replacing it with the positive piece. It actually started with a negative. The very first image I did on This Is Fine was a negative one. It was them both screaming at me in a moment when I was trying to work. And I kind of realized, I looked back at it, I'm like, that's a bad idea. All you're doing is reminding yourself of the bad things of the day. So I flipped to the good ones. So I guess I would say, number one, whatever culture, media, or whatever, or food, or whatever it is that creates a good sense memory for you, tap into it. And then secondarily, create new sense memories that you can tap into as well. Sense memory really works for me. Like, it's a major, it really affects my mood.
All right. So I'm going to go through this list. We've got to kind of wrap it up. But on this list here, I've got number one, mastering the duck above water. Right? How you appear professionally, virtually, and you're just making it happen, right? You're just making it happen. Number two was, how long should your intervals be? How long do you really need? So thinking about your role, the kinds of conversations you have, do I always need an hour of quiet time? Or do I just need 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, and then try to sort of plan that accordingly? And then tallying the things that you've done together with your child. I do that too, because to be honest, he forgets. He might come up and say, we didn't play today. I said, yeah, we just played, you know, guess who? And he's like, oh yeah, we did do that. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to tally those and say, yeah, we actually did spend some time today, buddy. And then also setting expectations for separation, saying this is our time together, but remember in about 10 minutes here, we're going to have our solo time. And I'm prompting my child to, you know, do that solo activity that they do enjoy. And then they're more okay with sort of being separate and me taking my solo time. And then finally, documenting the day, and so that you can look back on a few of these things, whether it be, you know, something related to your interests, or maybe it's actually, you know, pictures of your children or things that happened that day, so that you can, at the end of the day, look back and sort of close out the day with a good feeling. I think these are all really meaningful and unique tips, Mark, and I appreciate you coming on, thinking about this and sharing with us and coming on and talking with us today. So thanks again.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
That wraps it up for this episode. Keep on the lookout for more useful topics on the Edmentum Parent Resource page. Thanks for listening.